You will be in room 237, and you have free Wi-Fi there. Also, from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. every morning, there's a free continental breakfast.
All the European countries lay before me. Where should I fly to first? The pit of the donut. Thank you, Turkey. Buckle up. Let's see where we shall go next. The Danish. Clearly from Brussels. Hello, Greece, where the yogurt flows like water. Yes. Like go-gurt, but to stay.
And who are you, my little friend? Not a spoon, not a fork, but something in between, a fapoon. What will you think of next, Germany?
TBTL.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's Friday. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
Brother, who are you? What are you doing? I'm with the news, dude.
What comes before anything? What have we always said is the most important thing?
Breakfast.
Family.
Family, right?
Yeah.
I thought you meant the things you eat.
They say, you snooze, you lose. Well, we snossed. And look what we lost.
Well, good morning and welcome to a Friday edition of TBTL.
It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Hadouken!
Coming to you from just off of Mississippi Avenue in Portland, Oregon, the Bean City. It's episode 2868 in a collector series, and we have got a show for you on this Friday, my friends.
Let the fun begin.
A lot of talk of energy out there, you know, BDE, which I'll let you Google that, unless you're a child. Don't Google that if you're a child. I think we need to add Nina Totenberg energy to the list, because Nina Totenberg showed some just some incredible, what would you call it? Nina Totenberg is, I just think, in a way, a real model for all of us of how we need to move through life. I'm going to tell you why coming up on the show. It involved Arnold Schwarzenegger, of all people. Also, and we will get to this story today, the residents of Wooddenbong, Australia, are drawing the line on ways to get people to come visit the town of Wooddenbong, Australia. So we'll get into that. Plus, we've got emails, we've got V-mails, and because it's Friday, we've got music for your weekend. I very rarely have like music that dropped this week. Usually, my move on music for your weekend is to bring you something from the late 90s, just to really keep on the cutting edge of music. But today, I actually have a song that I'm excited to share with all of you. Oh, by the way, if we have time, this isn't officially on the rundown, but they think they've figured out why Garfield plastic phones have been washing ashore in France for years. By the way, 9-year-old Luke Burbank would have moved to France just to be nearer to the Garfield plastic phones. So we'll maybe talk about that too, time permitting. All right, all of that is going to happen as soon as we welcome this guy, the longest-running Cobra of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's doing the work. He's baby stepping, and here he is, having the time of his life, back at it again in the white vans. He's Andrew.
Oh, explicit. Ooh.
Walsh. And he joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I still have Alanis Morissette songs going through my head after yesterday's show.
Me too.
As you were talking and doing your intro, I'm just sitting over here. You live, you learn, And then those are literally the only lyrics I know. And apparently she says something about a jagged
and
little
pill
in there somewhere.
To be honest with you, you weren't strong on those lyrics.
No.
I think you said, you
Tim
live,
Heidecker.
You love.
Yeah. Well, that's how I sing in my head. That was not an imitation of singing. That was an imitation of what goes through my head when I'm just kind of singing inside there.
Well, you have to admit, that song is actually pretty good.
It's great.
About the fact that there was an article about a woman who was writing for Jezebel talking about how the little Jagged Little Pill didn't really hold up for her as a record or as an album. I'm still a little unclear on the difference between a record and an album. I just think album means longer. I don't know. But anyway, the internet was quite upset with that take. And so yesterday we went out with an Alanis Morissette song. And I will tell you, Andrew, that I was in the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center up there in Bellingham, the Bean City, dancing, like not full-on dancing, but moving to the music with the headphones still on for the amount of that song that we played at the end of the show. Like, put it, you can dissect the lyrics. You can talk about whether or not it's groundbreaking. But that song, seriously, like, was making me happy yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, not to just redo the conversation we had yesterday, but I think what surprised me about the whole thing is that people took it so seriously. And I don't mean took this conversation so seriously, I mean took the album so seriously. Like, yeah, I think now in 2019 we all agree that listening to Alanis is fun, and especially for people our age who kind of like can enjoy the retro factor there. But I didn't know that for so many people it was like a kind of a groundbreaking record and really important in their life. And, you know, I put it in the same category that I put in a lot of other kind of corny-ish music from the 90s that I can still enjoy. But anyway, I don't want people to... I don't need Liz Phair yelling at me for calling Alanis Morissette
my God.
Corny.
So. Yeah, right. You would be so excited.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would.
We actually, on Livewire last night, that's why I'm, of course, down here in Portland still, The theme of the show was real talk, and we asked the audience for their most unpopular opinions, and it was actually really fun because they had a lot of unpopular opinions, and they shared them with us.
That's interesting. I was filling in on the night show on Cairo last night, and I was filling in for G.
Wow.
Scott.
Okay.
It was me and
thanks
Aaron.
Thanks for
Mason.
One-upping me.
Yeah, no problem.
I get it. You were on commercial radio, and direct for three hours. Cool.
Mine was live. You know, just reaching people live, not like you get to edit yours up, polish it up. Anyway, no. The reason I bring it up is because they have a segment that I think is a really good idea. I've seen it actually on the on their planning board before. It was G's idea to do a segment every night called Unpopular Opinion, and he comes up. I don't know if it's always his unpopular opinion, or sometimes it's maybe somebody else's unpopular opinion. I'm not sure. But last night, we went with my unpopular opinion, which is, and I'm sure I've talked to you about this on the show before, that airport food should not be good and healthy. It should be... We should have more like junk food at the airport and more fast food. And I think most people are happy that when you go to the airport now, you don't just have to choose between a bunch of fast food joints. But for me, that was always my, hey, I'm at the airport. I have to eat Burger King. I would look forward to going to the airport because I was forced to eat fast food that I wouldn't usually eat on a normal day. And now I sort of feel like you go to the airport and it's all Wolfgang Pucks and... You know, other like kind of faux fancy
easy.
Stuff. I know your buddy over there.
Easy. No. That's an interesting take because I think for me, because I do travel so much, if I had that same rule, I could conceivably eat fast food like 2 to 3 meals a day for the majority of the year, which honestly sounds fun to me. But you know what I think also, this is not only an unpopular take, it's an unfun take, and it's exactly the person I never wanted to become. But the other thing that I think people really get excited about going to the airport and traveling is drinking, because it's this, like, it is very social. I mean, you know, it's socially acceptable to go out on the weekend or even a weeknight and have fun, have some drinks, something I've done literally thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of times in my life. But I'll notice people queuing up at the airport bar at 10 in the morning drinking heavily. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't look like people who do that. Like, yeah. it's just because they're like, well, you know, you're getting on a plane, you got to get the Bloody Mary, and they make it a double for a dollar more or whatever. And I'm not even out here judging those people. I really am not. But it's just funny because I think we've all kind of agreed, look, flying is scary and annoying. So some of us are going to be pretty drunk while it's happening.
Yes. And also, I think there's a factor in it. Because I see that a lot, too. And I don't, believe it or not, I'm not usually a huge partaker in that. I mean, if it's time appropriate, like if it's in the evening and I'm at the airport, yes, I will definitely, and if I have time, I'll go and I'll sit at a bar and have a beer or two waiting for my flight. But I think people, like you're pointing out, will do it no matter what time of day it is or even morning. And I see people doing that and I kind of get a kick out of it because I think it's like, well, nobody... Maybe I've been up since, you know, 6 o'clock the morning before, or maybe I'm in a very different time zone and it actually is nighttime to me. I feel like airports are like a timeless place. Everybody is on their own time zone there. And so you can't, I don't know if judgment comes into it, but you can't judge somebody for having a beer at 10 in the morning because maybe it's not 10 in the morning to them. And so I wonder if people kind of take advantage of that and think, I'm going to have a morning beer because nobody knows.
Possibly, although I wonder what the international flight schedule in and out of Sky Harbor is in Phoenix. Uh-huh. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if someone just got off the Concorde. Like, what time is
right.
it? Oh, by the way, I mentioned this last night on Livewire, and I also mentioned it on Twitter, but I don't think it came up on this show. So let me just check this last content box off my list.
Good.
Any moderately interesting experience I have must be spread across a minimum of 5 platforms of my... It's the 5 platforms of communication success, brought to you by Luke Burbank. Did I tell you about this, that when I was in Boston, after we did the show on whatever morning that would have been, I guess Tuesday morning, I had a little extra time, and so I was going to go out to Salem where the witch trials were, but it just was going to be a little bit of a long drive, and I was worried about getting stuck kind of far away from the airport and missing my flight. So I kept it local, and I got real Boston on it. I went to the Paul Revere house, which was cool, and I kind of walked around there, the Freedom Trail, and just checked out some of the kind of old history of Boston. And I went to a restaurant that was right around the corner from Paul Revere's house called, the name is escaping me now, but it was such a cute little restaurant. I think it was called like the Daily Catch. Have you ever been to that place?
It's not ringing a bell. I don't think so.
I think you would really like this place. You know that, you know Boston better than I do, but that whole neighborhood around where like Paul Revere's house is very Italian. Like it's all Italian restaurants.
Oh, okay. So that's in the North End. That's like little. They call it the North End, maybe. But essentially it's like Little Italy.
Definitely where, had a major Little Italy vibe.
That's where old men will literally like put folding chairs and tables out in the street or on the sidewalk and play chess. Like that's a really cool neighborhood.
Yeah, that I would have been so unsurprised to see that happening. I would have seen like little old men sitting in chairs they brought themselves, drinking either a really tiny bitter coffee or a like plastic cup of wine while they you know take in the wider world. Anyway, it was a cool neighborhood and I was digging it. But I was really excited to find this little restaurant, the Daily Catch, which was like has like 3 tables in it. And anyway, this is a long climb for a short slide, but because of the seating in the restaurant was really tight, I ended up kind of sitting. And it's also one of those restaurants where, and this is also a very Italian thing, I get the sense, there's just bottles of wine on the table, and if you open them and you have some, you have some, and then you just tell them, and you pay for it. Like, which I love that. I just think that's like the coolest, like, I don't know, honor system or whatever. So I end up sitting at this kind of shared table with this group of folks who I can tell are also going to the airport after this because they're talking about how they're going to overcome their jet lag when they get home. And they're really strategizing hard on this. And it's a group of women. And one woman is like, I'm just going to try to stay up and just push through and then go to work so I can get a normal night's sleep the next night. And then the other person's like, I'm going to go to work, but then I'm going to come home early and just crash. And I'm listening to them, and like it becomes clear to me at some point that they're flying back to South Carolina.
That's the same time zone.
I think if it's not, it's pretty close. It was just like, wow. And then it was like all I could do to not, like, I don't know, just somehow went away. I didn't say anything. I just sat there quietly eating my pasta puttanesca. But I was just like, I mean, it was kind of charming in a way, but I just wondered, it's like, have they internalized so much talk about, look, travel is not fun a lot of the time. I get it. It's 80% of the content on this show is me complaining about it. But I was like, did they just hear about jet lag and just think that that applies to any time you get on a plane? You know, like, I found it actually kind of a little bit charming, actually.
Oh, I find it completely charming. And I have people like that in my life, and I probably was not completely unlike that. Keep in mind, I didn't really fly on my first airplane until I had graduated from college. So, and I come from, you know, a family that went on a lot of road trips and stuff as a kid. But, like, I come from pretty kind of provincial people, sort of. So I do know that, like, you know, I have family members that if they have to fly, the idea of flying out to Seattle is just like, it's kind of the equivalent of like having to do the Oregon Trail in the, you know, 1800s. Like, that's kind of as big of a deal it is. So, yeah, I mean, I think that people don't realize that jet lag sometimes has to do with, or jet lag does have to do with the time difference, and not just I'm tired because I had to wake up early and grab a flight and, you know, do all the and go through TSA.
I think what it must also be for some folks, and actually these people, I don't know, you know, where they were on this kind of spectrum, but I think it must just be stressful for people if you don't fly a lot, because there's just a bunch of unknowns.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
Of course, once you do it a bunch, you're just like, oh, those aren't actually a big deal. But, like, you know, yeah, for folks that have not, they don't do it on the reg. I was thinking, it's interesting because my mom flies, other than me, my mom flies more than anyone else I know in America. And she has still to this day never spent more than $200 for a cross-country flight, which means a lot of red eyes through Detroit and then El Paso and then eventually Philadelphia, her destination. But my mom is kind of inspiring in a way because she has a real wanderlust. And she's also extremely parsimonious. Mm-hmm. And she has not let those two things cancel each other out. Like, she travels like crazy, and she is never pays more than a few bucks for it. Which is kind of, again, it's like I could really take a page from her book. Like, I'm so, I can't believe I'm going to say this, Andrew. I can't believe I'm going to say this on the show. You know what? Let's take a break, and then I'm going to consider whether or not I want to say this on the show.
What?
Because it's like,
what is going on in your head? I'm dying.
We'll find out after the break.
Hopefully.
All right, quick break, then back with more TBTL. Have a go team phase?
No, I didn't. You know, I get them confused with the, I'm going to say
stop
something
team
derisive here. They're not the ones who did all of the, like, look how clever we are where we dance on treadmills videos.
That's okay, go. But
okay.
I can see why you would be
yeah,
confused.
Yeah, see, I think that, and I'm like, I don't know if you can tell, very not impressed with them. So I think that the Go team ends up accidentally getting swept up in that. I'll bet you I would like the Go team.
I think you would, too. They're actually kind of a cool outfit. They're very, like, inspired, actually, by Sonic Youth, believe it or not.
Oh,
like,
I'm a
yeah,
big
they,
Sonic
they,
Youth
that's,
fan.
I know how to tickle your butt with a feather.
God, is that what you were deciding not to say? Because you should have not said it.
Not even close. We have not even entered that realm of the show. No, but I'm playing this because at the NPR music department asked the people that work there, and one of whom is my daughter, to, because it was opening day of the baseball season. By the way, congratulations to your undefeated Seattle Mariners.
I know.
True to the pink.
And just dominant yesterday too. I gotta say, like, I know that it's only game three and that we have a disaster of a season ahead of us, but I'm freaking giddy. I love it.
Can someone please put me into a medically induced coma right now?
Right.
Bring me out in five seasons. But I want this to be my last. I want this to be my last memory of this team for a while. Just blowing up Chris Sale.
Oh my God.
That's the most runs surrendered by a defending World Series champion team, I believe. In the opening game of the next season, which is just a completely useless fact, but there it is.
I'll take
it. Because it was the opening day of the baseball season, the NPR music department asked the folks that worked there to pick what their walk-up music would be.
Hmm.
And my daughter,
that's a good one,
that song from the Go Team, because that was, of course, that I was obsessed with the Go Team and used to play them constantly in the car. And so anyway, she it was the NPR music was tweeting about it, so I tweeted that out. I said, "Cancel the paternity test. This is definitely my child."
Well, I'm, you know, waiting to hear what your big weird thing you're going to say is. But if I were to decide to start listening to the Go Team, is this the album that you would recommend? Because I really liked the sound of that.
Thunder Lightning
Strike, it says. Yeah, Thunder Lightning Strike.
Yeah.
2004.
Yeah, check that one out. Check
all
that
right,
one out. Actually, honestly, after the show, I'm going to go back and I'm going to like do a quick 5 minutes of research. And then I will tell you which album I would like you to start with. So as I think to most... increase the chances that you'll like it, because I want you to like it.
I like that.
The thing that I was going to say is, like, it's just not relatable, and it's just it's an example of a thing that I have more than proved to the listeners, which is just, like, I can find ways to be, like, annoyed at life that are just not – it's just basically a statement about what a sort of terrible person I am, and again, I feel like the listeners are like, yeah, we get it. We really get it, Luke. We listen to the show. We hear this 5 days a week. You don't need to gild that lily anymore. But before the break, I was talking about how my mom loves to travel. And again, this is something I have to really give her credit for. You know, I'm on a mission to try to be more positive about my parents on this show. And this is a very positive thing about my mom, which is that she's fearless. Like, we were talking before the break about if you just joined us, which would be really unprecedented. I don't know how that would have happened.
Could you do a quick reset?
Yeah, hold on. Let me sweep the quarter hour real quick. You know, like, for a lot of people, as we were talking about, doing something for the first time is intimidating because you don't know how it's going to go, and it keeps a lot of people from doing things. And my mom is just not wired that way. She will do anything, and she will just sort of figure it out. And, like, I love that about her, like, you know, that she just travels constantly and, like, again, is always finding some weird-ass deal, and it's always just, like, a major crap show where she's middle seat, red eye, four cities. She doesn't want to pay the $20 to check or to bring a bag on, so it's, like, it all has to fit in a purse. So she's got the world's largest purse, and she's got, like, a baby holding it for her on the flight because she wants to go to sleep. It's just always a thing, but it's, like, her fearlessness is really inspiring to me because I wouldn't call myself fearless, but I think to the degree that I have a kind of weird confidence about figuring things out on the fly, again, sometimes unfounded confidence, I really get that from her, and I need to be appreciative of that. That being said, I'm also very different than her in that when I was flying home from Boston to Seattle, I was in first class, and in fact, I'll just level with you. This is not hashtag relatable, but every single flight I took on the last trip, I was in first class. And when I was in first class flying from Boston to Seattle, which is a 6.5 hour flight, so getting, like, me ranking first class is like the longer the flight, the you know, the more excited I am that this happened.
Oh God, yeah, of course.
I mean, that's, I guess, kind of obvious. But what I've also noticed is that between certain cities, like if you're LA to New York, getting upgraded to first class is a real feat because you got a lot of, like, power travelers on that flight. A lot of people who have a lot of status and their companies have paid a lot of money for these tickets. So, and also just people who just straight up bought first class tickets. So there are certain routes that I usually don't get on first class. Chicago to Seattle on Friday afternoon is one that's real hit and miss. But anyway, I got into first class in Boston. But I was in the back row, first class, far right seat on the window. It's a great seat. Very comfortable. Could stretch out. They're bringing me free food. They're bringing me my club soda with a lime. Everything is great in my life. But I was like, yeah, but you know what? I'm pretty far back. I really wish I was closer to the front in first class. Andrew, I was unhappy about where I was in first class. This is the kind of not relatable content that I was not going to bring to the show and now am bringing to the show. Like, and I was hating myself as I was, because here's what happens. They come around and they take your food order. And there's a whole system where, like, they only have so much of each thing. And because I don't eat meat anymore, I'm all, like, you know, very, like, oh, is my only option going to be the hamburger or something? Like, as if that would be the end of the world. I could just, like, you know, eat the salad and be fine. Again, me getting to be in first class is a gift from heaven that I don't deserve. So, but I start to get stressed out about if they're going to be out of the thing that I want to get that's the vegetarian option. And they actually weren't, which was fine. But then it also was a thing of, like, the guy would come, he'd walk like two or three rows back and bring people their replacement drinks or their nuts or their hot towel. Let's talk about hot towels for a second. Have you ever used a hot towel in real life as a restorative thing? Like, is that a thing people are doing outside of the first class cabin of an airplane?
No. I mean, occasionally they'll do it at a restaurant, and I will, you know, sometimes they'll even bring a finger bowl with, like, water and a lemon and a cloth, you know, if you're in a fancy restaurant. But I only use it because I feel social pressure, too. Like, yes. I just want to go in the bathroom and wash my hands if I need to wash my hands.
I don't have any use for a hot towel, but if somebody brings it out to me and they're handing it to me with some tongs, I'm taking it because – and then these real, like – people that are in first class all the time, there's all these systems around the towel. Like, you take the towel, you dab your face, and then you wipe down your whole seat area with it. Like, so I've learned from the other people that are in first class. Like, but I'm like, honestly, I'm like, I could just absolutely take or leave this towel. But if they told me to eat it, I would. I'd be like, okay, this is what you do in first class.
Right. So,
this is good towel.
Ooh,
you know, I was deadheading on the San Jose to Phoenix flight the other day, and towel wasn't good. This is good towel. So anyway, I just found myself having the thought, oh, you know what? I'd be getting better service if I was sitting more towards the front of first class. And then I found myself, and I don't know. I don't do this a lot. I think maybe you are more plagued by kind of feeling disappointed in yourself or frustrated about things than I am. But I felt legitimately disappointed in myself that I even had that thought.
You think I'm less plagued or more plagued by what?
I think that you tend to be I'm a very insecure person, but I also don't, like, it's odd. I'm not disappointed in myself a lot, which is a weird thing to say for someone who's insecure. Like, that's just not, I can't quite explain it, but it's like, I don't beat myself up over stuff very much. I should probably beat myself up over things more. I let myself off the hook a lot. And I think you're someone who kind of beats yourself up sometimes, at least based on kind of what you've told me.
I started to say something to Aaron Mason about that last night. We're talking about that cringy – actually, I want to talk about this in a second, but that cringy WTOL local news video of the news team trying to say things like on fleek and talk like the teens. And we're trying to figure out if there's something to talk about as a segment there. And I started to say, like, Mason, like, you know, can you think of a time where you were trying to be a little bit cooler, dropping slang or have a cringy moment? Like, I'm like, I got to be honest with you. I go through my life. Like, there are moments where – I am just thinking of things that I've said in the past and my own cringy moments. It can go back years and years. And he interrupts me. He says, Andrew, that is the entire basis of your personality. Like, I know.
Ooh.
You can do away with the formalities here. We know who you are. So, yeah, I guess it is part of my brand to beat myself up over past social transgressions.
Well, I was in real time just being mad at myself that I've gone from – being a person who – and I was very public on this show about it. This was some years ago. I was like, I need to crack the code on how are those people at the front of the plane and I'm never at the front of the plane. And I guess I'm kind of proud of it that I had a goal and I achieved it where I was like, why are they up there? And then I just kind of, like, figured it out and I started, like, always flying with the same airline. And obsessively amassing, you know, these points and miles, and like it kind of worked.
Working your ass off. Can we just say that too? Like, you're not flying around. I'm sure people, some people might be maybe envious or would love this idea of having your job of flying around interviewing people like Wolfgang Puck and Kathy Griffin, but it's work. You're working your ass off. Like, this isn't being given to you.
Sure. But I guess I just, the fact that, like, I guess really why it kind of troubled me was because obviously there's no bottom to this, is what I mean.
I'll tell you
another example of this, which this sounds like I'm just trying to bring up, like, unexpected things that have happened in my life. But something that's similar is I went to the first Coachella. And I know I've told this story before on the show, but I went to the first Coachella and I saw the Flaming Lips. And I remember being in the audience and it was a million degrees. And I looked up on the side stage and I saw David Cross and his, I believe, now wife, Amber Tamblyn. They were standing on the side stage and they were drinking out of red Solo cups. And I looked at them and I thought, how do I get to be there? I'm here. I want to be there. And also, I saw that, you know, the Flaming Lips had people dancing on stage, and I had the same thought. I was like, I want to be in that world. And then through a series of strange things, I ended up being on stage with the Flaming Lips years later at Sasquatch. And not even just being dancing on the side stage, literally like saying stuff into the microphone and like high-fiving Wayne Coyne and being very kind of central to 5 minutes of their show. And I remember being up there, and it was great, don't get me wrong. But then it was like I had a really fun time, and at some point I remember thinking, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, where does this shit end? Like, so I guess I was, you know, just getting to be in first class on a cross-country flight is a minor miracle in my life. And then the fact that it's like, it wasn't as miraculous to me as it might have been. And that was just like, oh, I think it was troubling because I was like, oh, it turns out it's not about being in first class. It turns out the annoying friend I made on the way was me.
yeah. I mean, I feel like we've had what I'm about to say will be familiar territory for you. Like, I understand what you're saying. I am not being willfully ignorant of your point. And I think it's good that you're being thoughtful about it and introspective about it. Having said that, I also think that you are a driven person. And I admire that, too. Like, I have this job. I have a lot of jobs because of my association with you, I think. And that's great. I'm lucky for that. But, like, I don't know. I understand what you mean. You want to take a step back. You want to take a look in perspective and make sure that you're appreciating things and not being shallow, I guess. But on the other hand, I admire the fact that you are driven, because when you look at that idea of how do I get there, how do I stand at the side of that stage, well, part of that could be in the immediate moment, like, well, who do I know or how can I weasel or worm my way up there? but that's a broader statement as how do I become somebody who is in a position in life where I'm hanging with the musicians and comedians and performers that I really respect. I mean, that's how so many people who are in the performing arts end up at the high level of pop culture and the performing arts, because they're driven and they want to be part of that community. Yeah, they like their art, but also there's something about that. And I think that's very human. And I actually admire that you have goals. That's something that I admire. Like, I don't know what my goals are. I'd like to get through the day, certainly. Beyond that, I don't know.
I think you're kind of underselling your goals and ambition there. But I do hear what you're saying. And I think what it is for me is I wish that I could figure out how to turn on that kind of sense of restlessness and that sense of whatever you want to call it. I guess you could say ambition. I wish I could turn that on when it's working for me and then turn it off when I don't need it. Because, like, I think about this a lot. Like, I've been very on this kind of mindfulness journey of late and meditation and, like, legitimately using the Calm app, our fine sponsor, Calm.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, they have these this whole section of ambient music that Moby created that I am here for. Like, I have listening to, like, so much ambient, like, just, it almost would be like one sound droning on for 20 minutes, but it's like a weirdly relaxing sound. I love it. But
it really, by the way, outside of a commercial break, I want to say, it is such a cool app. Like, and I know we say it in the ads, but you and I were having conversations like this before they were a sponsor of the show, because I saw their TV commercial and I was like, that is an awesome commercial. And I immediately wanted the app. And it really is like, it is, well, I guess I don't really delve into that world much, but it is unlike anything that I know of out there. It's like a whole world inside that thing. Anyway, I'm honestly not just saying that because they're a sponsor. I would be saying that anyway. Right. And then we would say, by the way, they could be a sponsor if they wanted to. Only this time they actually
are.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a Matryoshka doll of wellness. It's just like I keep going deeper into the app and going, oh, this is cool.
Right.
Oh, this bedtime stories? Sure.
Yeah.
Although that one is a little dangerous because people use TBTL to fall asleep. We don't need calm horning in on our action.
Do you think we should start telling our, should we start doing our dazzling donors and blurs days in this type of voice so that we don't wake our
I just
audience?
Got a little bit of a, my ASMR skirt just got blown back a little
All
bit,
right.
my friend.
Calm down, Sammy.
Sorry. Calm down, little Bow Wow. Anyway, this is overly well-worn territory for us, but it's just, what I would like to do is, if I can figure out how to be happy in any circumstance, like for me, I guess what I'm trying to say is, on the one hand, the fact that I am tend to be sort of goal oriented has helped me in my life. But what I would really like to figure out is, what if on that flight from Boston to Seattle, I would have been in coach middle seat at the back of the plane, or, you know, somewhere, and it's what I think of as an undesirable part of the seating chart.
Mm-hmm.
Could I find a way to be okay in that world? Because if I can, then nothing can happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just mean that like more generally, like if I can, instead of always super maximizing my world and removing things that make me uncomfortable and not being in seat 4F, but being in seat 1F, like if I can figure out how to be okay in seat 25B. By the way, avoid B. B is for bad. If you're ever on a flight, don't, if you have B on your ticket, run, because that's going to be a middle seat. B is never like the window or aisle.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to see a lot of A's. You want to see a lot of F's. An occasional E. Run from B.
For some reason, that just sounded really dirty. I want to see a lot of A's,
right?
And I want to see a lot of F's.
Yep,
that's
indeed.
It.
So anyway, that's all of which is just to say that, like, I like most people, I'm complicated, and I have moments where, like, I'm going to go on a hike after this. I'm really excited. I'm going to go out to the gorge, and I'll probably – I feel like being outside, it really kind of helps, like, bioregulate me. I'll be walking up some hill, and I'll feel really at peace, and I'll feel like this is enough. And then there will be other times in my life where I'm in first class, but I'm not in the right first class seat, and I'll be like – this is not enough. And the answer is, I'm probably never going to be all one or all the other, but I would like to learn how to be happy when things aren't going my way, because then I don't have to worry about things not going my way.
Yeah.
You know? And that's just a goal that I have that I'm clearly not there on. But
I think hunger plays a little bit of that too, though. I think it's just like those Snickers commercials. Like, I think I get, because we all can relate to a degree with what you're talking about. You know, if it's not first class, it's something else. But you know that I'm set in my ways. So sometimes when I go into a restaurant, I want a very specific experience. And then, oh, they don't have this one thing I wanted. Or I can't get in there because there's a line because of the brunch crowd. Like, that is when I'm at my worst and not appreciating the moment because I'm a little bit hungry. And so I do, again, not to give you an excuse, and I am picking up on what you're saying about being present and appreciative for whatever the situation is. But I do think, and maybe this is something to think about in the moment, like I always talk about my friend Avishai, tired, cold, or hungry. He was dating somebody, and at some point they realized when they were getting a little cranky with each other, they were tired, cold, or hungry, and they would try to identify which one it was and then solve that problem and then smooth things out. So maybe the next time you're kind of in that situation, and I understand that if there's a food scarcity sort of situation, which in this case food scarcity is, you know, maybe misappropriating that word.
Sure.
But, you know, generally speaking, you're hungry, you're traveling, you know that there's a limited number of things to get. I'm not excusing any kind of negative attitude or behavior, but I think it makes sense and is relatable.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope that the listeners understand. Like, I worry sometimes when I share these, like, I share my, like, worst impulses on the show because I hope it's relatable to people. But then it's like, if you're scoring at home, Luke Burbank is a terrible person. So I'm hoping that it's, you know, people kind of take it in the spirit it's intended, I guess. Hey, let's talk real quick, and then we should thank some dazzling donors and get to the rest of the show. But you wanted to clarify something about this morning news from Toledo that has really been getting a lot of internet attention, and we played it as the intro tape. As you mentioned, it was the newscasters, because I think the big story was that the kids in the local school district were going to be taking some standardized tests, and so they decided to do this whole update in kind of quote-unquote youth speak.
Yes.
But there was something, what did we get wrong?
Well, I don't know if we did. I don't know if we did. Maybe I just did. But since this is an audio medium, and in case we picked up a listener since yesterday, this is what we're talking about here.
Good morning, TPS students. It is testing week, and it's time to slay all day.
Yeet. Stay woke, beyond fleek, and get that Gucci breakfast.
Goals!
That's about all I can take of that. And we talked about how cringeworthy it is. You said you could kind of identify with it a little bit, just like, you know, you're doing something corny and you're just going to ham it up.
I'm one of the few people in America that's like, that was kind of funny. They went for it. I mean, I am... That you want to talk about an unpopular opinion? I think I'm holding a very unpopular opinion.
Well, actually, I have a theory on that, too. I don't want to totally derail this point. But, I mean, I also think that you're trying to get into a headspace where you're more comfortable just putting it all out there and being corny, like eating a bunch of pieces of pizza at once for CBS News and realizing that, like, there's a line of that that you kind of have to do for what you're trying to do. So you don't want to be in your head too much about looking like a dork, because sometimes you need to look like a dork in order to do whatever you want to do on TV. But here's the deal, and maybe you knew this. I did not realize this, but this was not on TV. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
See, this changes the story for me. I was chatting with Phyllis on Slack right before we started rolling, and I found out last night because we talked about this on the night show, and I grabbed another article. When we talked about it, I guess yesterday, there were only a couple of articles about it, but a lot of social media chatter about it. And all of the articles I saw, I found three of them on a Google News search, all led back to one teenager's tweet who posted it. And I think, I'm going to have to paraphrase, but it was something like, I can't believe my local TV station broadcasts this. Or there was some language in there that definitely indicated that this was on television. And I remember even before yesterday's show, or when you sent me that tape, I Googled around. I'm like, how did other people not tweet about this? Like, why is it all linking back to this one teenager's tweet? But I didn't really think about it past that. And then yesterday, by the time the night show is on and I'm looking this up again, there's a lot more articles about it. And one of them was from the station itself, WTOL in Toledo. And it was them explaining the whole background of this thing. And they, listen, it's definitely cringeworthy. And if somebody asked me to do this for the web or for broadcast, I would run the other way personally anyway. But they said, yeah, we knew this was cringy. We're kind of doing it. But here's the background. Like, the, you know, Toledo public schools have had really terrible attendance rates. It's a problem. It's hurting, you know, it hurts the funding that you get from the federal government. And so the local school district reached out to a bunch of local media organizations and said, if you can do anything, produce anything, do something fun for the kids to try to get them engaged and put this on their radar and get them to show up to school, that would be great. So we, our news team, did this corny thing. And we was just to be distributed via Twitter and for the kids to share. And yeah, we knew it was cringeworthy. I sort of think of it as kind of like an extended dad joke. But
right.
I still wouldn't want to be a part of this. And I still think it's super, super cringy. And I still think that, like, if you're aiming this at the, like, when I thought it was on TV, I'm like, well, this isn't for the kids. This is for the kids' parents, really. But no, this was for the kids, so I still think it's a kind of a misguided idea. But for me, it's a pretty big change that this was something that they did on the request of the school district, and it was only distributed amongst the kids and not broadcast.
I definitely do not think it in any way upped the attendance by these kids for the testing. Because... Woo!
Gesundheit.
Boy, that was... I don't know if we leave that... What's that doing to our ASMR listeners? Do we leave that in is the real question.
Lynn, we got a new drop.
Fair's fair. I'm on a long-term Stanford prison experiment to mess with your brain, Andrew, so it's only fair that you can play me sneezing on the show. Anyway, yeah, I definitely don't think that it would have like actually achieved the goal of getting kids to be more engaged with the school district. If anything, they're probably harder eye-rolling. But I do appreciate, you know, I appreciate what they were going for. And then the other thing is, for me, the fact that it wasn't on TV, I don't mean this, I'm not trying to say anything judgy about these newscasters, but I actually, it kind of bums me out because to me, then they're not going for it as hard. Like, I liked the idea that they just massively embarrassed themselves for like a minute and a half on Toledo television. And like, they just had to get out there and like that, the fact that it was like a web extra, that kind of, that actually makes me less excited about it. The more people that saw it, the more excited I would be about this. Like if this was the opening of the Oscars, that would be the highest level. Or like if this was the Super Bowl halftime show, the most eyeballs on it, the better, because then the more they were going for it. It just being kind of a thing they did, you know, for the students, that lowers the risk for them in my mind. So, and not to
but of course now in reality though, way, way, way more people know about it because of the because it went viral, so it kind of doesn't matter whether or not it was. I'm sure anybody who would have seen this on TV in Toledo has seen it online.
Yes. You know what would be kind of interesting would be to actually like see if this – the fact that it went viral, to see if it had any positive or negative impact on attendance for these tests.
That would be a good follow-up story. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get on that right after we do this.
On your mark.
On your mark.
Get set.
Get set.
Now ready.
Ready.
Go. Everybody rattle, dazzle.
We have some dazzling donors to thank. Everybody. These are kind, generous, wonderful people who are making a pretty significant donation each month. And it's vital to the financial health of the show. And it's something that allows you to, I guess, or what we do if you dazzle us with your donation each month is we say, okay, send us a message about anything, just about, and we'll read it on the air. It's kind of their time to shine. And our first dazzling donor today is PJ Lynn from Rome, Georgia. PJ says, hey, friendos, I'd like to use my dazzling donor message to make a simple public service announcement. As a small-town family doctor. I love the idea, Andrew, that we have small-town family docs listening to this show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I went to a small-town family doc when I was growing up in Valley City, Ohio.
I love the idea of listener PJ, like, delivering a baby, mm-hmm. going out, like, boil some water, get me some newspapers, and then, like, getting in the car. And I assume for some reason that the birth was breech. I think of PJ as being Doc Baker from Little House on the Prairie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, doing house calls, certainly.
And then I'm sure this is not PJ's life, but PJ, don't interrupt your dazzling donor message with reality here. Let me have this. And then I imagine Dr. PJ getting in his car and driving and listening to TBTL. For some reason, I really like that idea.
I think, listen to TBTL during the birth, Dr. PJ.
Absolutely.
Think about that.
Start that kid off right, will you? Right. If you haven't yet, find yourself a local family doctor to take care of you and your whole family. I hear Luke and Andrew talking about some of their medical ailments, and I wish they had a local doc they could pop in to see or call on the phone with their questions. Having a family doctor on your side will be a boon to your health. They see all ages and stages and can address a wide variety of problems, from common colds, which I apparently am suffering from now this morning. Sorry, everybody. And stitches, to vaccinations, to chronic issues like high blood pressure and diabetes, all in the same office. This is someone with whom you could have a long-term physician-patient relationship. So make sure you find one that you get along with. If you don't connect with the first one, find another. But just for you, Luke and Andrew, I'm happy to answer any spur-of-the-moment call. Wow. Oh. That's huge, Andrew. Do you realize that we have, at least remotely, we have a family doc that we can call and say, does this look infected?
Is this a pimple or a boil? All right.
Oh, man, that is a question I ask myself every morning these days when I look in the mirror. I mean, I was looking at makeup tutorials the other night. I was Googling, like, male makeup. Like, I have been bedeviled by my skin of late. It is so embarrassing. So, yeah, Dr. PJ, do you have a family dermatologist you can recommend me to
that I can call? Quick note on that. Are you in a situation, though, where you're using makeup that is begetting more pimples?
I don't think so. It's a vicious cycle, though, because as I've been reading, you know what it actually probably is, believe it or not? Increase in my testosterone levels, which is weird at 42, about to be 43.
Oh, who's bragging? Jeez Louise.
Dr. Arakaki? I have a special relationship with Dr. Arakaki. Like, because, you know, it's the same reason that, like, when you go through, it's hormonal, and when you go through puberty, you know, your pores, and if you're predisposed to this, unfortunately, if you basically just have, like, narrow pores, they can kind of, because of changes in hormone level, they can seal up shut, and then when you sweat, and I exercise a fair amount, another humble brag, it just, your pore starts filling up with stuff that it shouldn't be filling up with, because there's, you know, the bathtub drain plug is in. And so I started exfoliating. I started using some of Carrie when I was home for all of 24 hours. I was using my wife's exfoliant. So I'm trying to deal with it. It seems to be kind of getting a little better, but it is embarrassing at age 42 to be
let's get real personal. To what do you attribute the increase in testosterone at 43?
I mean, I just rugged, manly virility.
Yeah, I'm glad I asked.
I'm
glad I asked.
I can't.
I didn't,
you know,
see this coming.
I can't explain it any other way. No, I don't know. I was thinking, is it a food I'm eating? Maybe because I eat so much dairy, because I'm not eating meat, but I am still eating a lot of, like, cheese and stuff. Maybe that's not good for me. I was watching, like, YouTube videos and dumb shit. People being like, top 10 acne-causing foods, which is like, I'm the least scientifically reliable. Like, it's right next to 9/11 was an inside job in terms of useful information.
Right, yeah. I have a theory on foods that create pimples, but for me, it's not what you eat. It's like what you rub on your face. Like, I think if you take an orange and you rub it on your face, you're pretty good. But if you take, like, a piece of pepperoni and you rub it on your face, that's bad. If you just use, like, a Stridex pad on your face, don't do that.
Because
I think that creates more problems. I've been doing some research.
Oh, my God. I want to see that TV ad for reverse Stridex. It's just, like, exactly one of those, like, what were those? I guess it was Stridex. Those, like, circular pads that had benzoyl peroxide. Not benzoyl peroxide. They had some kind of astringent on them. But it's just pepperonis. And you're Jordan Peele's Continental Breakfast character. Actually, it's Jordan Peele's ordering for his Menagerie of Toys character.
Keep them up.
Can we just say, and we haven't even thanked our second dazzling donor yet, but can I just say, I was thinking at the top of the show, you played some tape. That's Jordan Peele. Who's actually been a guest on this show, believe it or not, and
of course
is back in the news because his latest film, Us, is getting rave reviews and making lots of money. Isn't it insane that that guy has all of that in his brain?
Yeah.
Like, how funny Key and Peele was, and now how amazingly, I'm going to go so far as to say important, the work he's doing with movies
absolutely.
Like Get Out is. Like, what the... I mean, honestly, what the F, dude? Stop showing off.
I know.
Can you please pick one or the other? How are you the guy from that skit we started the show with? And how are you also creating culturally important and also scary as shit stuff? Like, how are you doing this? And stop.
I remember watching Key and Peele. When I first got turned on to Key and Peele, it was so next level for me. The way these guys, I mean, not just the comedy, but the social commentary in a way that was like just... I mean, at times incredibly subtle and smart and just done in a way I had never seen before. Like, I think both of those guys are brilliant, and Jordan Peele is just breaking out. I mean, he is, yeah, you say important, capital I important, when we kind of will look back on his career and what he's done to cinema, and he's just getting started. Like, I cannot say enough. I cannot. I don't have enough hyperbole in my brain to say how much I respect and love that guy.
How about just the joke Fapoon?
By oh, itself, Germany, what will you?
If I made up,
next?
If I ever made up something as funny as Fapoon, that'd be it. I'd be like, I'm done. I'm retiring. Like, that is alone one of the funniest jokes I've heard in months.
Oh my God. Is he a dazzling donor?
He should be. Honestly, with all this show has done for him, the Jordan Peele, like the TBTL bump that Jordan got after he was on this show, I think it cannot be overestimated. All right, we got to thank another dazzling donor. It's Joseph Lamb, pronounced Worcester. Well played, Joseph. Joseph is in Phoenix, Arizona. He says, many thanks to Luke and Andrew for another year of quality hashtag content. Well, you haven't heard this show yet, Joe, so, you know, let's reserve judgment. I usually listen while I'm at work or at the gym, so it's nice to have some imaginary radio friend to keep me company. Here is to more many years of podcarding. And by the way, Joseph, here is to more years. Thank you for the donation. It's kind of how we're able to do the show and how we will be able to keep doing the show. If I may put in a shameless plug, my husband, Corey, is a freelance photographer. If any tens are in Phoenix and need portraits or event photography, please check out www.corey, that's like C-O-R-E-Y, dot photo. So Joseph's husband, freelance photographer, is at corey.photo. If you're in the greater Phoenix area and you need photos done, this is the person to turn to because his husband is a dazzling donor and supporter of the show. And then Joseph adds, P.S. I miss cat rolling.
Mm. Meow, 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 meow. There. I'll do anything for a dazzling donor.
I love it. That was great. That was, Lynn, did you take a note? we have a new cat rolling sound effect, and it's that. So listen, PJ and Joseph, thank you so much for supporting TBTL. Thanks for making the show possible. Couldn't be here without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, this first one is pretty quick, Andrew, but did you see the Nina Totenberg meme that's going around?
I did, I think. Listen, I don't want to start this segment by taking the piss out of it, but it was one of those things where I read a write-up of it first, a write-up that was very, very, very excited about this. And then when I hit play on it, it seemed like it was like a is it only like 3 seconds long, or is there more to it than the 3 seconds?
I mean, really, this is the reason it's interesting to us is really more of just from like an audio production standpoint and from a news gathering standpoint.
Mm-hmm,
so
yes.
There's this like Arnold Schwarzenegger was part of. I actually don't even know the specific case he was involved in, but somehow Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing a press conference outside of the U.S. Supreme Court. And we live in a world where the Terminator is a politically and judicially relevant person. The guy who said, get down, there's no time, it's the farmer's field, and get to the chopper. You may know him from such hits as Get to the Chopper, is weighing in on Supreme Court rulings. But anyway, he was standing in front of one of those clusters of microphones. And this is where it became interesting to me because, Andrew, you and I have both been in this position where, I mean, we've done enough malt box talk on this show to last a lifetime.
Yet the listeners still crave more, and I'm just trying to provide what they want.
But, you know, when you see those like clusters of microphones for press conferences, those usually lead back to some central a lot of times there's like a central box that you know, you can plug your recording device into to get the feed, or you're just running that microphone back to your recording device, and you're just recording what you're getting from the microphone. But sometimes you show up at a thing late. Now, I don't know what was going on with Nina. She might have been filing a piece. I'm not saying she was being disorganized, because I don't think that she rolls that way. But for whatever reason, she like shows up at this thing. And I don't know if this ever happened to you, Andrew, but it happened to me hundreds, if not thousands of times when I was a reporter and just a news producer. You get there and the thing's starting, and you realize, if I don't get close to this person with a microphone, I'm not getting the audio. So instead of like carefully putting your mic in this cluster with what's called a mic flag, those like things that say the name of the radio network or the TV station, instead of putting your mic in the cluster of microphones, Nina Totenberg just like emerges into the frame, sunglasses, earmuffs, and just sticks a microphone in Arnold Schwarzenegger's face to get the audio that she needed from him. I love this on so many levels. I love that Nina Totenberg is apparently getting her own tape still.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Is amazing to me. I love that she, because I honestly, if I would have rolled up onto that situation, my mind would have immediately gone to, I'm going to have to just like ask one of these other people later if I can get their tape. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to have to like go steal this off of CNN. Or like, I cannot just stand literally like next to Arnold Schwarzenegger with the mic in his face getting my recording. Like, this would be, because it'd be too embarrassing. And I would know that I'm probably going to be on national TV unintentionally. Like, I would just be like, this is tape I'm not getting, or this is tape that I am going to have to get through. I'm going to put an intern on the case. I'm Nina Totenberg, and I'm going to call up someone and say, hey, get me that tape later. That's my move if I'm Nina Totenberg. But nope, that's not what she did. She just busts out her recording gear, stands next to him, sticks a microphone in his face, and becomes a legend.
Mm-hmm. And I liked, my favorite thing was, so everybody's making this huge deal of this, and you were saying at the beginning, Nina Totenberg energy is a thing now. And I do appreciate everything you just said. I think I just expected, again, I had just read a very, very breathless piece about this, and then I watched it, and I just think I did it in the wrong order. But what I liked about it was then, so Arnold Schwarzenegger tweets out the video himself and says, it wouldn't be a visit to the Supreme Court without answering a question from Nina Totenberg. It was a joy, and she clearly lives by my rule. Don't listen to the naysayers. Proud to be her co-star. Gets a little weird at the end. But then Nina retweets it, and this is what I like. And if for some reason I'm seeing this in light of the WTOL thing. She says, so glad to be a Totenator to the Terminator. And then she just says, it was a busy day at the Supremes for all of us. Hashtag SCOTUS. And like, I actually think the Totenator is a funny joke. And then she like, she has one little joke, and in the same tweet, she's back to business. Just like, she's yes. not like, she is not over the top. Like, she kind of knows what her strengths are, and she does it. And her strength is being, you know, the best and most well-known Supreme Court correspondent.
I was so flattered. This is just really the show of me bringing up a million stories where I'm like kind of, well, I guess the flight story, I wasn't the hero, but I was so flattered because she and Robert Siegel were at the 20th anniversary of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And I don't know if I'd ever actually really talked to her before. I had probably said hi to her a couple times, but I would under no circumstances assume that she knows anything about me or that I even worked there. And so when I met her backstage, I was like, you know, kind of a little sheepish. And I introduced myself like this is my thing now. I over introduce myself to people. So if they don't remember me, I get them out of that jam. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And it's backfired a couple times where I introduce myself and somebody says, I know you,
yeah,
or I know who
I do
you
that
are,
all the time.
But I just want to, I don't want them to have to pretend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, hey, Luke Burbank, I used to work at NPR. And she goes, I know who you are. She goes, mm-hmm. Every time I hear you on the radio, I think, I can't believe that we let that guy go.
Oh, wow.
I know. I was like, she's probably lying. But like the fact that Nina Totenberg has, even for one second, held the thought of me in her mind and had a thought about it. I was like,
that's not a lie.
It makes my
She's
life.
She's not lying, because that's a very specific thing about
yeah,
your experience
right.
at NPR. That's a really cool compliment. Now I'm jealous.
I mean, Good. I finally accomplished my goal.
Cracked me in my cool demeanor.
Okay. Dateline Sydney, Australia. As you know, and as we've reported on this show many times, Australia is known for its big things. The big banana, the big pineapple, the big prawn.
It's a lobster, by the way. You keep saying prawn, and it's definitely a lobster.
It's never been a prawn?
There might be a big prawn somewhere. I'd be surprised if there wasn't. But the story about the one that was in danger and then got saved for funding is a lobster.
Wow. God, memory is so weird. Because I have been visualizing it as a prawn this whole time. And the one that was in danger of moving out of a town. I mean, the lobster would make more sense, I guess. But that's so funny. I just must have transposed those crustaceans in my mind. And then, like, I can imagine the giant prawn that the town was worried was going to move. Like, well, I can picture it.
It looks prawn-esque. And I mean, you know, I just said something that, like, I just said something with confidence, which means I'm wrong. Like, I'm wrong. But I mean, I am looking at the New York Times right now. For sale, 55-foot tall lobster. Owners in a pinch. Can you help? Like, that's our story, right?
Yeah, that's
from
the
August
story.
Of last year. Okay.
100%.
The big lobster, totally. Known as Larry. So it was Larry. Oh, that's right. Larry the lobster, because people were writing in about Larry the lobster. Okay. Every time I take that tone with you, I'm wrong.
And I will. No.
Did you say Perry the prawn?
Yes.
Show title.
So we've talked about these big things, and there's a town in New South Wales called Woodenbong, and this guy wants to, as you have probably already figured out through the promotion of this story over the course of two shows, the guy is named Paul Pearson, and he wants to build a huge wooden bong. He says he wants it to be bigger than the big merino. The big merino is a 50-foot concrete merino ram, which is located elsewhere in Australia. Woodenbong, I should mention, is population 381. They, the New York Times writes, are not, the most of the other residents, excited by the idea. Chris Reed, the president of the Progress Association, says he doesn't think it's a good idea. We don't want to promote drug use. The town has been brainstorming ways to encourage tourism because 381 people out there in the middle of nowhere, it's not a lot going on in this town. But it sounds like the residents, other than this guy, Paul Pearson, it sounds like pretty much everybody else is worried. They're already, it sounds like, just a little bit, like they get the joke that it's called Woodenbong, and they don't want to lean into that identity for the town.
Well, he also claims that this will bring trillions of dollars to the town. Like, the guy, so little background on this guy. So he didn't live here his whole life. I think you said it's a small town of like 380-some people. He lived somewhere else, and he had this hobby of making bongs out of found objects. Like, he was making them out of, like, dolls that he found, another bric-a-brac. And then he moves to Woodenbong, and he's like, well, I guess my new thing is wooden bongs. So he makes these things. I think the small ones he makes are actually usable. I'm a little unclear on that, because in some cases it said that the wooden bongs will get water rot if they're actually used. So they might just be, wait for this, decorative bongs, which, yeah, exactly. And the guy is, I mean, the guy's a weirdo in a certain way. Like, he's gotten this idea bigger than it ever should have been. I mean, he got it
right.
In the New York Times.
Into
and
the
even
New York
more
Times.
Importantly, he's being talked about on TBTL. So, I mean, this idea has actually gotten bigger than you might think. I want to try to do something here, Luke. I know that you listened to this tape. You listened to it before I did. He was interviewed by the ABC, you know, the television network there. And I pulled some tape for the radio show last night, and I forgot to bring it home with me, but I think I can cue up this video. It's a weird video, and it doesn't give you tons of information, but I just want people to hear what his voice is like, because I'm somewhat fascinated by it. And at the beginning of this weird video, he's just kind of showing off some of the regular-sized bongs he's made. And in this little piece here, he is showing the camera a little bong that he's made specifically for ladies. You're going to hear him, I think, sanding at first.
This one was created from a wooden vase from Fiji. Unsure what type of timber, but it's a ladies' bong for ladies.
I love that you pulled that tape. when I watched the video, I was like, I don't know how this fits in, but I do need more people to know how he says Fiji and ladies.
Exactly. And now here's this one again. So he's also made, so far, the biggest one he's made is about a 7 foot tall bong. And it's not usable. This one definitely isn't usable. It's basically just a big log like, up that's yeah, up the on its end.
Is that the carb? What do you call the pipe?
I don't. I think maybe the pipe.
Whatever the pipe part is, like,
or the bowl part, I guess it's called.
It's way too big. Talking about hot dog down a hallway, dude, you could not. There's not enough weed in the world to fill up the like chamber of this. Of
but
this
it's also
bong he's made.
It is not even. I mean, it's not even close to being functional. It's not a. It's not even a bowl. It's just a pipe he stuck in there. It would all just. It's not even close to looking functional. It is literally just a big log that he has kind of peeled the bark off of, sanded a bit, turned up on its end, and then maybe drilled a hole in and stuck a big piece of pipe into it. And that's it. I mean, it doesn't even look impressive at all. This is a 7 foot version he made, and he wants to make a 50 foot version. But again, I just want you to hear his voice here. This is going to be very, very short. In this weird ass video produced by the ABC, he's dragging this wooden thing into the frame. You're going to hear the scratching of this thing being dragged across the floor. And then he says a very memorable sentence.
It's my new favorite bong. I wish I could smoke it.
With a lady from Fiji.
And not Timber. I don't do accents very well. But anyway, that doesn't really tell you much about the story, but I just love his voice.
Okay, that's great because now this has been introduced into the TBTL ecosystem, meaning you can now use that as part of intro tape.
Like exactly what I was thinking.
It's been TBTL certified.
Yep.
So
that was worth it.
Bulldizzer is also certified. You know, I have to be honest though, like I don't actually know, and I should probably find this out. Maybe you in your research yesterday. What is the status of like recreational marijuana in Australia?
I kept meaning to look that up myself, and I am so surprised that the New York Times didn't mention that in the story. So let
me
look it up now.
Honestly, the fact that there's a practical use to this potentially, in other words, I don't know if this is the guy to build it based on this previous bong work. I don't know if he's the person to build the largest wooden bong in the world, but I can imagine a town where you have this enormous – and like imagine it's like a really nice looking wooden bong, like the kind of thing you might find in a head shop or whatever. But it's just scaled way up and then it's functional. Like you can take a puff from it. Like you go – I mean this is why it wouldn't – this is not the guy to build it. You would need actual like people that can make things and engineer things. But – don't you think that would be a huge friggin' tourist attraction? Like, every stoner I know would be like, okay, are we within 400 miles of the world's largest bong? Because take just the photo op of you're standing on some raised platform and you're smoking out of this thing where, like, the weed that your friend put in is, like, three stories down and you're getting a puff from that weed in the world's largest bong. Like, I don't even smoke and I would go do that.
I'm looking this up, and apparently Australia, marijuana is illegal there, but they have a very laissez-faire attitude about enforcing it, apparently. And I am looking at an article from just this past December saying that after Canada legalized it on a nationwide level, Australia could be next. But right now, unless there's something like in state by state within, or what are they, provinces or states in Australia? Maybe there are individual laws, but what I'm seeing in a quick internet search is that it is illegal there.
Well, when that law changes, I actually don't think this guy, I don't think this is a terrible idea. Like, because with the world's like largest lobster, or as I call it, prawn, you know, it's just you go and you gawk at it, but it doesn't, and even the merino and these other big things, they just sit there. They're sort of static. But this is something where you could actually do a tricky feat of engineering where it's like a functional giant bong, which is kind of funny, honestly. And people would line up to use it, I feel, or take a picture using it. So, like, I, you know, I say this with a limited, I have limited skin in this game, but it's really not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, I would obviously think first about like kind of health implications, or like how you have like a communal bong like, gets real gross real
well,
fast.
Well, you have like a plastic thing that you have some kind of a little plastic thing that you slip over the wherever, you know, there's a way to do it so that, and then you monetize it. Like you buy some kind of little, you know, dental dam type apparatus that you put over the bong, and it could be branded Wooden Bong Australia, you know?
Like, but I'm worried about you got to change out that water inside of it a lot, though. I mean, listen, I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm saying that bongs are, I think I have a little bit more experience with bongs than you do. And college was a crazy time. I knew these guys in college who created this giant bong system. I might have told you about it, that actually took up several rooms. They had like all these beakers and tubes, and I mean, I guess this is what stoners do when they have a little bit of creativity and a lot of weed and not much motivation to do anything else. They just created this huge, like, you would literally go into one of their bedrooms where like the part that you hit the bong is, and then somebody else would be out in the living room with the lighter, like, I don't know, like 10 feet away, lighting the other end of it. And I look back at that as it was so nasty. Now, I know that's not what you're suggesting here, but like, you know, a bong gets nasty very quickly because you're using water to, you know, filtrate the smoke.
That sounds awesome to me. Had I met those people in college, I just also just like, I like Rube Goldberg machines and I like domino setups. So it just sounds like that to me.
It was nasty, though. It really was. But anyway, I'm not trying to take the piss out of your argument. I'm just saying that that is one thing that I would like be kind of concerned about on a practical level. One other thing, I'm just going to throw this out there, is, you know, some people in this town are saying, listen, wooden bong is like based on Aboriginal word, and you know, it's like our version of it, or our translation of a word, and it's disrespectful. I mean, the people who are making that argument, I wonder if they're spending a lot of time thinking about honoring the Aboriginal people in other aspects of life. It sort of sounds like this is like an excuse that they can use to bolster their argument. I guess that's a lot of assumptions on my part, but anyway, that's one thing that people are saying, which is a legitimate argument, I guess. Does it disrespect the people that Wooden Bong is really supposed to be named after?
I feel like we've been having a real fun show, and I don't want to say something that I haven't thought through, but to me it doesn't feel disrespectful, because it's like a bong's not even an Australian word. I think it's playing on the fact that something just sounds like something else.
Yeah, no, I'm mostly okay with it. Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I'm just overjoyed that you had the presence of mind to pull that tape, Andrew, and play it, because I had passed on it. I loaded the tape in my computer, but I didn't have the imagination you did around it where you described it. And again, now we know about ladies from Fiji.
It's a ladies' bong for ladies. Yeah, actually, I was just playing that from the video, but I'll pull it later and add it to our collection.
All right, let's do some music for your weekend before we get out of here. I got a song ready to go. Well, that's not true. I have a song that I wouldn't mind if you would cue up, Andrew.
Sure.
Or would you like to start? How do we start this?
No, why don't you go first?
All right. I've been real interested in this singer, Billie Eilish, who I think I found out about, honestly, because our friend Bean was tweeting about Billie Eilish, because she was on the Kevin and Bean show. And she had a song out a while ago that was, I guess, kind of a big hit. The video, she's singing to a microphone. She looks like a G.I. Joe, like, that set up for being in the snow. The outfit is quite interesting to me. I think that G.I. Joe was literally called Snow Job. So I clicked on it because of that, but then I really liked the music, and then I started reading about her more. I think there's a big article about her in Fader magazine this month, just talking about her kind of unconventional childhood and her family structure and her relationship with her brother. She just seems like a real interesting young person who's making cool music and art. So she has a new album out this week called When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? And this song... Now, I feel almost a little bad suggesting this song. The song is just the number 8, because this is not what the whole album sounds like. The album is kind of trippy and and in a way you could say downbeat. And this song does not reflect that. Her voice is heavily processed. This is a pretty upbeat number, but I really like this song. So take a listen to this. This is Billie Eilish. The song is 8. This is off of When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go?
Wait a minute. Let me finish. I know you don't care, but can you listen? I came committed. Guess I overdid it. Wore my heart out on a chain around my neck, but now it's missing. So I think I better go. I never really know how to please you. You're looking at me like I'm see-through. I guess I'm gonna go. I just never know how you feel. Do you even feel anything?
What do you think?
I love it. I love the production on it. I like the way it is kind of evolving as the song goes on.
Yes.
I feel like
a lot of the songs on this album do that. They kind of change tempo and sound. Also, you'll appreciate this. The first track on the album is just her taking out her Invisalign braces and saying, okay, now it's time to do this. Like, clearly she just was like in the studio about to record and then remembered she had to take out her Invisalign. And it's like track one on the album. I was like, that's a very TBTL way to start this album.
Yeah, here's a little clip of her that I found online.
If you had a favorite saying, what would it be?
Life's a party, rock your body.
Did you think of Marcel the Shell?
Yes.
During that first
people
part?
People say sometimes your head's too big. I say, compared to what?
Sometimes people say that my head is too big for my body. And then I say, compared to what?
Jenny Slate, right?
Yeah, Jenny Slate.
Talk about another man, fascinatingly talented person.
Yeah. All right. What is your suggestion, sir, for the weekend?
Yeah. This just came across my radar. I don't know anything about them. It's a band called Drug Dealer, which I guess is kind of like the opposite of the war on drugs. You know Drug Dealer?
Yeah, well, because of my daughter.
Okay.
Yeah, but I really like Drug Dealer's music.
I don't know a bunch of it, and the description is that they're more of a collective and that people kind of come and go, so I don't know what their broader sound is like. This is the only song that I know, and it's featuring vocals by somebody named, I'm going to pronounce it, Wise Blood. The name of the song is Honey, and it reminds me, and I think it'll remind most people of like a 70s, like almost maybe the Carpenters. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I'm loving it. So this song is called Honey by Drug Dealer.
When you're not around, your people have their way with words, and you don't have to hear the sound to feel the burn. Get up and down and very close to people's lives. You've got some things you can't erase. Honey, I've got mine. I know that you want to be seen and to be heard. Oh, to be loved, it's not a crime. But everybody's gonna lose theirs.
That guitar is so George Harrison, too.
Yeah.
I love this. Is this what the other stuff you heard sounds like?
No, not really, actually. But I like this, too. The other stuff is that I've heard is more like, almost, I would call it kind of a darker, like Sean Lennon from, I don't know if this This is where my ability to describe things is really holding us back as a show. It's that isn't what most of the other stuff I've heard is, but I really like that, and I really like the other stuff, so I would recommend people check it out. Drug Dealer, great band, terrible name, in my opinion. It's also not spelled Drug Dealer. It's like, right? Isn't it like there's some extra letters in there?
I think it's Drug Dealer, but just one word. Unless I'm looking at,
I remember there being something weird about it.
Drug Dealer. No, it looks like it's just Drug Dealer, but it's one word instead of two. But yeah, I'll check it out. This is off of a brand new record that I think is about to come out or came out this week. So I don't know the name of it.
Our listener suggestion, speaking of Jordan Peele, our listener suggestion comes from listener Raymond, who says, I saw the new Jordan Peele movie this weekend, and this song played during the closing credits, and I am becoming obsessed. This is one of those songs I feel like everyone knew about, but as with most things, I was late to the party, in this case, by nearly 50 years. Hmm. Well, I will say, Raymond, that I didn't know about this song, but I am now similarly obsessed. It's called Les Fleurs. It's by Minnie Riperton. Isn't Minnie Riperton Maya Rudolph's mom?
Oh my gosh! I mean, I read that wonderful story. Why can I never think of
the New York Times, the profile of
the
her,
profile?
That,
yeah,
Katie Weaver wrote.
Oh, was that Katie Weaver? That's Katie's. Yeah. I love that. And they were talking about her famous mom, who was a singer, and the name wasn't recognizable to me. But I think you're right. Now it's all coming together.
So this. Is I had never heard this song before, and I am the other thing I'll say about this, Andrew, is that I would not have liked this song like 5 years ago. I don't know, I wouldn't have liked it. It wouldn't have worked for me the way it's working for me. I don't know what's going on with me emotionally, but like this just is like the right song at the right time for me. Raymond continues, it has this great lo-fi chill vibe, but enough of a beat to keep it interesting. And is a GD Mother Trucktober jam. It's the type of song that I want to listen to on repeat while floating on an inflatable raft, but instead we'll put on a short playlist several times so I have plausible deniability when I say, it must be shuffled today. Anyway, love the show and thanks for all you and Andrew do. And then he writes, no mountain too tall and good luck to all. He shortens it to NMTT ampersand GLTA, which I kind of like.
Well, that's going to save some time right there.
Right there. So anyway, that'll be the music for your weekend from listener Raymond, and that'll be the end of our broadcast week. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. Thanks for being a part of TBTL. We're going to be back here on Monday when I can assume the Mariners will still be undefeated. And
where are you going to be on Monday?
Bellingham.
Oh, good. Nice.
Yes.
Welcome
excellent.
Home.
So listen, thanks everybody, and have a great weekend, please. And again, thank you for being part of what we're doing here. We appreciate all of y'all, and we'll see you then. Until then, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, and please remember, NMTT ampersand
GLTA.
We need you through a dream for all of these simple things and much more. A flower was born. It blooms to spread love and joy, faith and hope to people forlorn. Inside every man lives the seed of a flower. If he looks within, he finds beauty and power out.